If you were to go up very close to them and use a hand lens to look at them very closely, you would see that they're made up of nothing but medium to fine grain sand that's all quartz. There's nothing else in there. And as you look at those sands, you would start to think, well, how are we going to be able to sort out so well everything that could have weathered from any surrounding mountain range to create something that is so uniform? One way you do that is by blowing things along with wind. So those enormous cliffs that we see in the Canyonlands area, Zion, Ghost Ranch in northern New Mexico, these are all examples of what are basically enormous sand dune fields that have been preserved. And by just looking at the size of the grains, how rounded they are, and what they're made of, as well as a few other features that we'll talk about in just a minute, we can start to already tell part of the story of the Four Corners area in the western United States way back in time, just by making those simple observations. Now, when we talk about chemical sedimentary rocks, most of those tend to form in oceans and in lakes. So when we see a chemical sedimentary rock, and a good example of this is limestone, we often find limestones that are full of seashells. And that right there should be a clue that's already telling you something about the environment that that rock formed in. So when we see limestone, for example, smack in the middle of Colorado, where there's clearly not an ocean anymore, that's telling us that somewhere way back in the past, there was an ocean that covered that part of Colorado, and you precipitated out a limestone. And if you look at the little seashells that are in that limestone, they can tell you about the temperature of the water, if the water was really saline or not very saline. They can tell you all kinds of stories about past climate and past history of life on Earth. So when we think about fossils, of all the billions and billions of critters that have ever run around on this planet, probably less than 1% of all those individuals are actually ever preserved in the rock record as fossils. And if you think about all the things that can happen to a dead body during the course of the day, you'll see why we have so few that are preserved and why fossils are so rare and why we get so excited about them when we find them. So let's think about a cow. We have a cow that drops dead next to a river out in the middle of nowhere. As that cow is lying there, which is kind of gross to think about, it's going to get pulled apart. Turkey vultures, porcupines, anything that happens to be wandering by that decides that it would like a bite of that cow. As we do that, we're slowly tearing that body apart. Once the bones are exposed, if those are left lying out in the sun, they're going to start to bleach and then to crack and then to splinter until eventually there's nothing left but powder. And we have things like porcupines that like to grab those bones and take off with them and chew on them somewhere else. So our cow has already been disassembled. So how much of that cow are we going to be able to preserve in the rock record if it's already been pulled apart and scattered all over the landscape? Now, if your cow dies in the river, when there's enough sediment being moved by the river to bury that cow, all your scavengers can't get a hold of it. They can't pull it apart. And your bones are now protected from the sun. And as that skeleton is slowly buried deeper and deeper and deeper into the sediments, groundwater is going to come along, and it's going to slowly replace the structure of the bones with minerals. So when we go through this transition from organic bone into a fossil, we're replacing carbon-rich materials with minerals, like quartz. When we preserve an animal, now that you think about the cow metaphor,